Session number 10123, Mr. Cyril Watney, part one.
Can you tell me, first of all, Mr. Watney, whether you're a Frenchman or an Englishman?
Well, I am a Frenchman because I am the second generation born in France. And if you are the first generation born in France, at the age of 21, you can decide or opt to which nationality you wish to be. But if, as my father's case, at 21 years old, he desired to be British. When I was 16, the war started. So I couldn't, the option was never given to me, and I asked The Hague whether I had any power to become British, and they said no, I was French in all the countries in the world except in Britain and the British Commonwealth I could have British nationality.
Where exactly were you born?
I was born in Kerry. In Kerry, in the Padcaddy, just Kerry, Dover.
Were your mother and father?
My mother and father were... My father was born in Kerry, but my mother was born... had lived in Kerry all her life, but she... her mother came over to England for about a fortnight to give birth to my mother. So she was born in Britain.
But you've obviously got an English name.
Yes, we are descended from Watney's Brewery. That is really the whole story. We are descended from Watney's Brewery, but that was my great-grandfather, and I think that he was trying to do a wangle on with barley, with the purchases of barley for Watney's, and he wanted to take over barley, the barley supply. But unfortunately, the barley supply was very plentiful, and so his wangle wasn't working, and I think he probably committed suicide. But my grandfather at that time was at Heidelberg University in Germany, and as Watney's wouldn't leave any kind of financial support to my grandfather, went back to Kerry, where a friend of his had a father running a lace business. And my grandfather went in with him, and after a year, took over the whole business. And so Watney's became a tulle and dentelle business in the north of France, in Kerry.
Do you hold a British or a French passport at the moment?
I hold both.
And so you speak English and French just as well as each other?
Yes, I have been a British interpreter at the Western Atlantic Powers, as British interpreter at formation of NATO. I acted as interpreter in the peace at Dunkirk, which was signed after the end of the war, the peace which was at the end of the war with Germany. The battle didn't cease in Dunkirk. It went on for another 3 days until we eventually got the German admiral, who was the head, to form a peace in Dunkirk. And I then interpreted the piece in Dunkirk, which was a separate piece, which I signed as the interpreter.
When you speak to French people, can they detect any kind of English accent?
They couldn't when I went to France, but they can now, I think, because I haven't been back often enough, and one loses one's vocabulary. One's immediate access to vocabulary, doesn't one, mentally?
Yes.
Oh, it takes about a month to get back to French, perfect French speaking. But of course, the other thing is that there's a sense of humour, a British sense of humour. To interpret that into French is nearly an impossibility. You have to think of another story which, compares, gives the point of the English joke, but in French, which is maybe not the same, not a perfect translation, but it implies what you're trying to say.
Can you tell me how you came to join SOE?
Well, I was in the Royal Corps of Signals. I'd been to Clarendon Laboratories at Oxford to do research in televisions and television and aerials for television. And from there, I went into the Corps of Signals. And when from the Corps of Signals, I was then transferred to the Middlesex Regiment. Where before I was in the Middlesex Regiment, I had to go to an OCTU to take a commission. And while I was there, an intelligence officer came down to ask if anyone at the OCTU would like to go into the intelligence corps. And I asked to see him, and I suggested to him that I should be dropped in France, because in civilian clothes, because I felt that the continent of Europe was so large that German troops couldn't be everywhere throughout the whole of the of Europe, and there must be areas along the coast which had not got German troops. And at that time there were a lot of commando raids going on, and I said if I was taken to France, I could go and find an area where there were no Germans, send a message out on a radio transmitter which would be just aimed only at England, and it would give the commandos an area where they could come and land and then do the action they wanted. And then I left it to them to get off, but they would have a safe landing. Well, the intelligence officer said, well, how old are you? You're 18 or 19. You can't go into the intelligence corps until you're 26. So he said, I think you better forget that idea. I didn't, so I did forget it. I went into the Middlesex Regiment, and after 3 days in the Middlesex Regiment, the CO asked me to come and see him, and he said that he'd got a... Who did I know in the War Office? I said, well, nobody at the moment. He said, well, the War Office, somebody, Major Jepson, wants to see you, and he wants to see you... at the Northumberland Hotel near Trafalgar Square tomorrow, I think, and so would you go down there and see him? So I went down there, went to the Northumberland Hotel, went into the room, met Jepson, who said, well, we've heard from the intelligence corps your ideas of what you could have done for the attacks on France. I think we have got an idea going which might be of interest to you, and I think that you've got complete freedom to choose or to say no, but would you first go off to Godalming? You better take a train now, because there's one going off in a few minutes, to Godalming, and you'll be met. And you just go on living there, stay there, and come out of it. If you don't like it, just come out of it, and you can go back to the Middlesex Regiment, and there will be no harm. Nobody will know about what you've done. So that's what
that's
I did.
That's all he said to you?
That's what I did. And I went to Godalming, and at Godalming, of course, met the other. They were a mixture of French and English. Everyone spoke French. I spoke French with them. And then they taught us, they asked us to do certain different problems, like breaking into the officer's mess and stealing something, and then gave us odd tests, like how would you get across that river without touching the water when you haven't got a bridge there. And thing, items like that, which you'd to see your ability at thinking out ways by which you could manage to beat the things which were not available at the time. But of course, the question of getting across the river is getting a long pole and pole vaulting over it. There were things like that.
What happened after Godalming?
Well, after Godalming, I was sent up to Inverie, which was a house in a Loch Morar, I think, near Maleig in northwest Scotland, where I stayed with about 12 other British officers. We all spoke French there. We were treated as though we were people on holiday either, but giving us a lot of sabotage, chances of how to do sabotage. We used to have a course for half an hour on unarmed combat from Major Sykes, who was with Fairburn, and he was the person who made the Fairburn and Sykes, or FS, fighting knife for the commandos. Sykes taught us a lot of unarmed combat, and so when one kind of got to know those kind of things, then we were sent. We had a lot of training in pistol shooting, in sabotage, in particularly near the water too, or how to get off. There was somebody else who was how to get off small submarines, little one-man submarines onto the coast. There were a group of different people like that there. Well, one day, another person there called Peters asked me if I'd come out on a canoe with him. So, in the lock. So, we went out together in the canoe. And when we were about half a mile away, he said, do you know Walter Watney? And I said, yes, he's my uncle. He said, I only left him about a month ago. I said, what were you doing? He said, I was in the resistance, and a great friend of mine called Harry Perlevy dropped in France, and he broke his leg on landing, and we brought him back, and he stopped in a flat with my father in Beaulieu-sur-Mer. And my father mentioned it to my Uncle Walter, who was in contact with Harry Perlevy. And then Harry Perlevy was then brought back to Britain after going over the Pyrenees. I think he started with Peters, who was really Jacques Poirier, and they got back to Britain, I think through either Portugal or Gibraltar. And when they got back to Britain, Harry Perlevy was naturally looked after, but then he was ready to go back to France as for another on another course, but he would have to go back probably by submarine because he couldn't jump anymore. So either he was going to be landed by plane by Lysander, or he would go by felucca or thing. So I got friendly with Harry Pullavy and became extremely friendly with him, and I wanted to go to France with him. And I asked Maurice Buckmaster if I could go with Harry Pullavy, and he said, no, certainly not. He said, you're a wireless expert, and Harry Pullavy is a wireless expert. He said, there's no point in sending you both together. He said, you must go with George Hiller. So then I met George Hiller, and I liked George Hiller very much. We used to go together to decide on what we were doing when we dropped in France, and we used to go to the zoo, the London Zoo, and we used to go by the bear cage, because we felt that was the only place where nobody would listen to what we were talking about.
Why?
Because there was nobody there, and during the war, so we used to always go and discuss things by the bear cage in London Zoo.
What kind of a man was Hiller?
He was an extremely intelligent Frenchman. He was British, but he had been educated in France. He was at the Lycée Janson de Sailly, which is about the top school in France, and he spoke perfect French and was very had a very good knowledge of politics and that kind of thing.
You were just saying that you used to have these discussions outside the bear cage.
Yes, we did. Yeah.
But you were telling me earlier that you already had a fast speed with Morse.
Yes, because I had gone into the originally when I joined the army, I joined the Royal Corps of Signals. And I went to an octu in Aldershot, Royal Corps Signals octu in Aldershot, and I was made CO of the octu for a day, and I was told that all the people in the octu had got to take lorries and do a trip round Oxshot, Bagshot, Aldershot, and Camberley, and come back. So I was going to be the head. Well, all of us had only just learnt how to drive, passed driving certificate. So we went off, and unfortunately, I took the front of the convoy, and somebody at the back rather broke down and everything was held up, and he missed the way I had gone because he couldn't see whether I'd turned right or left at the place, and they came in at a different place, and as a result I was returned to unit as unsuitable to be an officer, because that was at the time when there were too many officers in the British Army, and say the octu had been told to reduce the amount of passes, and that was the first. So I was turned. I was returned to unit. My friend there wanted to go and see the CO because he objected to my being dismissed in that way, and he was the son of the head of the Royal Corps of Signals. I tried to persuade him not to go and see the CO, but I said I'd go back to the Royal Corps Signals, the ordinary, as a private. And I went up back to the Royal Corps Signals, where I was put into the course of signalling by Morse. I was then sent to Harrogate to become a Lance Corporal at a course, about 6 weeks course. Then I was sent to the War Office School of Signals, which had a headquarters in Windsor Great Park, where there were two sergeants in the group, in the instructors, who were the judges for high-speed Morse operators. And they said that I should try and see whether I could get a high-speed Morse thing. And I took the exam with them, and they passed me as a B1 radio operator, which was a very well-paid position. I then went to... I was very happy. I then was asked to do map reading and to teach map reading. So I gave lectures on map reading to people who were at the school, at the War Office School, in Windsor Great Park. And while I was doing it, by the statue of George III in Windsor Great Park, all of a sudden a car, staff car, arrived with the General of Southern Command. So I called everyone up to attention, went and saluted him, and he said, "You go on with your lecture." He said, "I'm just rather interested in seeing what you're doing." So I said, "Yes, sir," and I went on with my lecture on map reading. And he said, at the end, he said, "Look, let the troops go back to their barracks." And he said, "I want to talk to you." He said, "I want you to be an officer." And I said, "Well, I'm ready now. I'm passed as a B1 operator. I'm very comfortably settled, and I don't really want to be an officer. I'm working very well in the War Office School of Signals." And he said, "Well," he said, "you had a bad time at the Royal Corps Signals Octoo," and he said, "I'm going to send you to an infantry Octoo, and I think that you're going to find you'll be well treated there." So I said, "All right, sir." I was sent next day to Heysham Towers in the northwest, Lancashire, on the coast. And there, the Octoo was run by the Artist Rifles. And the CO was a comedian. Their officers were a charming lot of actors and people. I found this was, well, a marvellous set-up. I was given had been a Butlins camp originally. I was given a Butlins hut for myself. I was given, which was heated. I was told that I would be the signals person of the infantry group, and that I would have a car and driver with a radio set every morning, and that they would take me on a drive when the troops were doing route marches, so as to be able to report back information about where the troops were in Morse. Well, that was a most relaxing time there. I had a batman to clean my blanco, my things, and polish my boots. I had I lived in luxury there, and then I was passed out as a second lieutenant. As second lieutenant, I was sent to the Middlesex Regiment, and after 3 days with the Middlesex Regiment, the CO called me to see him, and he said, "I don't know if you know anyone in the War Office, but you've got to go and see Major Jepson." at the Northumberland Hotel in Trafalgar Square. And he said, you better go off now, he wants to see you by 3 o'clock. So I went to Northumberland Hotel, met Major Jepson, and...
We've already recorded.
Yeah, we've recorded.
Before we actually go on to you going to France, do you think that the training you had with SOE was adequate for what you wanted to do?
Perfectly adequate. Afterwards, before I dropped, Maurice Buckmaster asked to see me. He asked if I would, he stated that I was a volunteer, that I had got every power, that I was very young, and that I'd got every reason to be able to leave the special forces and go back to my regiment. And he said, if you want to stay on, you can. And I said, I did want to stay on. And so he said, well, you're off tonight. He came and at the airport, Telford.
Thamesford?
Thamesford. And we were flown from Thamesford. Correct. I was asked where we were going. They wouldn't tell me, but they said, you will meet, when you get there, he said, you will meet a Monsieur Chevalier. Remember the name, Chevalier, and ask for Monsieur Chevalier. He is the person who you will meet. And so we dropped in France. Monsieur Chevalier arrived in a Chevrolet, a drop-head Chevrolet. I couldn't believe. He yelled, have you had a good landing? But he was dressed in plus fours with a Royal Artillery tie on. He was speaking English, which we've been told one should never utter a word in English. And of all people, Harry Pillery. And it was Harry Pillery. And so that gave me a tremendous pleasure. At least I was working near him. And he drove, I went back with him and the Verlacs to their farm, where we had a tremendous meal and talked about what was happening in the area.
Who were the Verlacs?
Well, the Verlacs were, he was a very important person in the Socialist Party in France, and he was running the military